originates at KLRB, Carmel, California. Here's Manny.
Good evening. This is Mae Bressel in Carmel, California. This is tape number 490, and it's April 26, 1981. I'm going to have to throw out a lot of names this evening. I am planning to do that, so have a pencil handy or send a self-addressed stamped envelope if you want it. Two sheets, one side, where it's printed on each side, two pages of references and bibliography, because sometimes these programs move pretty quickly and it's hard to keep up with these names, but the material I've selected for this evening does have a lot of names. I'm also going to try to speak for 50 minutes and then summarize for 10 minutes and put into some historical context what I'm trying to say and spend that extra time having a continuity for some of the new listeners or the people that are not familiar with this broadcast. Send a self-addressed stamped envelope if you want these printed sheets. It's box 22511, Carmel 93922. If that goes too fast, look it up in the phone book. I need somebody who speaks German to translate an 82-page book I got from Amnesty International in Berlin on colonial dignidad, the Nazis running the organization, the money coming from Germany, the names of the people behind it, the torture that is going on, and the links to the multinational corporations. I got this book. It's 82 pages, but it has to be translated in English. So if some listener wants to do that for us, for all of us, I would appreciate it. I had a busy week this week, spent 5.5 hours with a Secret Service agent who had traveled around the country and abroad with Vice President Mondale. He came down to San Francisco to talk about the John Hinckley matter and if he was at the house and the motives there would be for his being at the house or someone like him, why I suspected that this person was there. And then 2 days later, two agents from the local FBI came to the house. I'll do more on those interviews when I write a letter to the Secret Service in Washington and to the Justice Department about these people. It's very confusing to realize that people that are out in the field allegedly investigating a gunning down, such as we saw in Washington, D.C., of four people, one of them including the president, how really not well-equipped they are to even comprehend the possibilities of crossfires. I sat with a diagram of possibilities of crossfires or other gunmen that, in all fairness, I don't think they actually had even considered. It's just pathetic, and I don't think that each individual in this country can depend upon the federal agencies to protect us in a time of emergency or crisis or riots or war. They're not equipped to solve conspiracies and to ask questions or to look for anything other than what the official conclusion is handed to them within 12 hours after the crime. I'm absolutely convinced that the way they work their way up in the agencies, that they're probably good little children in school and don't ask questions that would irritate the teachers, and they get promoted and then get these mediocre jobs of gumshoes without any comprehension of what is going on. I could tell just in the dialogue, and they seemed a little confused that I should be doing all of this work, and I'll share more of that with you later. It was really disgusting. And then I was out at Salinas at the court, the trial of Russell Little. He was charged with killing Dr. Marcus Foster, who was arrested and convicted at the time. He's having a retrial 7 years later, and this was the preceding of the SLA, the kidnapping of Patty Hearst. And I'll do an evening on American Terror and the kidnapping of Patty Hearst and the shocking revelations just that one day of the trial, Chris Thompson was on the stand, and I'll be following the rest of the week and maybe 2 weeks during the daytime of the trial out in Salinas and share that with you. The other matters that I'm going into this evening, and I'm going to put aside some very important articles in the news. I'm going to run them down real fast like I do sometimes to get back to them. And promise you I will do them. One is the influence of Fritz Kramer on Henry Kissinger and Alexander Haig. I'm getting some wonderful articles from friends back east, one in particular, and I want to share with you the Nazi origins of the career of Alexander Haig and Henry Kissinger. I want to do one evening's broadcast on the comparison of the Reagan shooting of various news media, the way they approach this shootout in Washington. One, the government agencies, the FBI and Justice Department version, the Liberty Lobby spotlight, Willie Cardo version of what happened, Lyndon LaRouche with his executive intelligence review and solidarity, then the People's World, which comes from the left, and then the major media, how they've covered it, and then May Brussels version, and where I'm different than the other five mentioned above. You may have seen in your newspapers this week, April the 20th, Richard Halloran, New York Times, said, protracted war, Caspar Weinberger has changed his mind. We will have instead of a limited nuclear war, we will have a steady, constant war with the Soviet Union. This was U.S. military strategy envisions conventional global war with the Soviets, which requires vast mobilization of manpower, equipment, supplies, which means that domestically in the United States, we can go economically bankrupt in our cities and states, but our manpower will be put towards this long war, and of course their goal has always been 1985. Haig is sending out more threatening messages to Russia that they're our top threat, and he's defining totalitarianism as the Soviet Union and any other repression or Nazi or fascist country as authoritarianism. We can support the authoritarians, but not the totalitarian, which is the Soviet Union. And the marvelous article sent to me from the New York News, Haig as Patton, how he prepared for the part, and was spotted in the Pentagon, and again by Fritz Kramer. There are Senate hearings going on world terrorism, the Senate Subcommittee on Security and Terrorism, and William Colby, the director of the CIA, was their first witness, and I want to talk about American terrorism because he set up the SLA and American terror in the United States, and I earmarked for the beginning of the decline of America, a declaration of war against us started by Colby when he came home from the Phoenix program in Southeast Asia. Another long article, The Assault on Terrorism, the Internal Security Committee, or a Witch Hunt in the Washington Post. And then from Europe, Terrorism's Terror, Its Fascination, The Haig Fuss Stirs Up Suspicions About Motives. So in Europe, they're questioning these articles on terrorism. And I did mention that that arrest at Crystal River in Florida of the commando and 12 military people could be linked to a General Haig Reichstag type of takeover in this country using nuclear weapons. And that arrest was hushed up, and we haven't heard a thing about that, but a friend who tapes put on her videotape and taped in NBC News April the 15th, just a week ago, almost two weeks ago, picked up an arrest in the Little Havana section in Miami, Florida, of two men who had been arrested originally in the Crystal River area by the atomic base there, and they'd gotten off at Crystal River, Florida. And these two had all kinds of weapons, submachine guns with silencers, the kind that their friend Mitchell Werbel makes, and homemade bombs, and all kinds of explosives. And they were on their way for an assassination to assassinate, and NBC News promised you'll hear about it shortly, but we haven't heard a word. They said the police will give you the names of the assassination target. So like the Crystal River, Florida arrest, or two of the 12 commandos arrested again, white men in the Cuban part of town, they weren't Cubans, with all kinds of weapons and carloads of weapons off to do the kill. I also want to do some church fronts for Nazism that were in the news this week. They were, since I was on the air last week, we'll get back to them. One is about Robert Burton and the Fellowship of Friends in the San Francisco area. The other is the Institute for Historical Review, the Liberty Lobby Group, that are having a meeting up at the UCLA Conference Center in Arrowhead, California, to disprove the idea that there were concentration camps in Nazi Germany that had gas chambers. This is put on by university professors around the United States, the Institute for Historical Review, to show that there was no Holocaust in Poland or Germany. And there are many other programs I want to do about Liberia, the city on a hill, the Santa Cruz University newspaper, has a section. They're covering El Salvador, they're covering Liberia now, and getting into foreign problems, which is really great for the students to be aware of. I also want to talk about the bank robberies, a continuation of those missing millions we've been doing. The fugitive from the underworld from Chicago who took off with $3.3 million from Tucson, Arizona, that was an inside job. And keep you up on the Wells Fargo arrest. Poor Harold Smith, he had an alias, he surfaced, and he had a press conference in L.A., and he said that he admitted he took $200 million to $300 million. This was in the Los Angeles Times. The Wells Fargo has been used as a funnel of millions of dollars for espionage, money, and I can cite just two areas on the Monterey Peninsula where large loans were given to individuals of questionable circumstances with absolutely no interest, just here in Monterey, Carmel area from Wells Fargo alone. Well, now Harold Smith has come out and confessed that he was involved with ripping off $200 to $300 million, and the bank only wanted him for $21 million, but he hasn't been charged for any of that million. It would be a hard feat for a black man married or living with a white woman with a home in Bel Air and an airplane and yachts and fancy foreign cars and going to Australian Hong Kong and naming the Japanese mafia and the Nigerian mob crowd. It would be hard for him to finagle the books of a Beverly Hills bank and go away with the $21 million. But now he's had a press conference that he has $300 million, so that would make it hard for Wells Fargo to account for money that he says he took that they haven't even said was missing. So I will do a lot on those later, but they're going to have to wait for a few weeks. There was an article in the Washington Post about an organization in Washington, D.C., that you would laugh at if it weren't so sad. It's called the Regenbogenverlag. Can't pronounce it, maybe. Regenbogen. That's a rainbow. Verlag. Verlang. And it's run by a man called Prophet Fernando L. Dasbach. Dasbach. Now, he originally was a follower of the Guru Maharishi, who came to this country in the 70s. He was 23 years old and was supposed to be a saint. He has headquarters in Florida and I think in Colorado also. I have to check that up again. Denver, Colorado, I believe, was one of his headquarters. Interesting, because I make the connection now again with John Hinckley in Denver, Colorado. I'll check that out for you. But the Washington Post said that as of March the 15th, he was sending out notices to church services around Washington, D.C., calling a declaration of war. He had a long document of the declaration of war, and it's been engraved and sent to people in Washington. And he had claimed that Ronald Reagan would be the first person to be murdered, then it would be Senator Mark Hatfield, and he would have his organization, who are so-called priests, murdering other ministers and priests to bring on the Armageddon as fast as they can and escalate the world of Jesus as it should be. He went to church services March the 15th, declared the war, and declared a long anti-Semitic tirade. He has a war against the infidels of religion, and he's maintained, and there's a large article in the Washington Post, that by the year 2001, not one Jew will be left in this country. That's his belief, and if they don't wake up, I think it's possible. That's 21 years to go. He has these engraved invitations. He sent them to 150 churches in Washington. He invited people to attend the wedding feast of the Father. And he said, God will punish Jews who denied Christ. They've been suffering 2,000 years. God created Adolf Hitler. He can create more Jews to be stuck in the ovens. Now, he has threatened to start killing politicians in Washington, D.C., and priests. And he advertised himself as the only cult that's not going to kill its own members. It will only kill the opposition. Now, there's a Reverend McIntyre down in the South that has been working with the CIA, the Defense Department, and it was the clone of John Hinckley, his counterpart, this Edward Richardson, who said that if he would finish off Reagan, if Hinckley didn't do it, and then there were a lot of other killings that they would do. He trained in Florida with Reverend McIntyre, Carl McIntyre, and I'll do more on that later. But this notice of war that he had engraved is printed in the Washington Post. And the interesting thing is that the Secret Service didn't take the guy seriously, of course. And then the question comes out if John Hinckley was too violent for the Nazis, that they kicked him out, and too radical for them, and one to blow up and shoot things. And if he was in Washington, D.C. prior to when the president was killed, his photograph was there in front of the White House. And if he received a telephone call from a woman in the hotel, if he was calling out to people in Washington, D.C., was he in touch with these people who said this is what they were going to do? They named their first target, and their target was shot, and the assailant is a far right winger with a devout Christian family background. So are there links of John Hinckley Jr. to Fernando Dasbach? We don't know. But the government is going to search them out. If we don't probe them, they're not going to look too far. Now, I want to talk about the church connections to the Hinckley family and to the world fascism and the world Nazism, or the goal of the ovens that this man talked about, because if he was just one person, he wouldn't even be worth describing. But there's something else going on, and it's been brewing since World War II, and it may be a little late to take notice, but just for the record, we can say, well, on tape 490, we talked about it. The Wall Street Journal had an article about the Hinckley family, April the 6th, 1981, and they talked about not only the National Socialist affiliations of John Hinckley Jr. and his white supremacy group, Chicago-based, is where he was, and how he wanted to preserve the memory of Hitler's Third Reich, that his zeal was too extreme for most of the groups. This article in Wall Street Journal talks about the father who set up, in quotes, this is from the newspaper, the Wall Street Journal, the father, John Hinckley Sr., set up his own ambitious missionary foundation to help drought-stricken Guatemalans build water treatments. Now, this is a missionary foundation with water treatment facilities. He became a water resources consultant to World Vision International, a huge interdenominational organization with projects at 85 third world countries. He went with World Vision to Africa, that's Nigeria, he was there, and in Brazil last year, and the father is affiliated with that organization. Now, the Christian Century magazine in May of 1979, May 16th, 1979, had an article reprinted in People's World, April the 11th, and this is what it said. It said, it was during the Vietnam War that many of World Vision's inadequacies began to emerge. Instead of being nonpartisan and instead of being humanitarian, it expressed clear anti-communist sentiments and was openly supporting the American military in their participation. In at least 75% of the Cambodian operation alone, it was funded by United States Aid, the USAID, the Linked Agency for International Development, which is a Defense Department project. American trucks and helicopters were available for the World Vision program. What a good view, like World Watchers. We're World Watchers, they're World Vision. The CIA used information obtained by the group, so they were informers, and by their field workers as part of their normal intelligence function. World Vision are often missionaries of the very conservative right-wing capitalist values, the right-wing, and this is in third world countries, as much as they serve the poor. World Vision is part has been discredited in their refugee work in South China Seas. In 1978, they sent their own ship to the South China Sea to aid boat people. When the refugees assumed that it would be a rescue boat, they refused to leave. They climbed aboard that boat, the Sea Suite. In World Vision's ties to the CIA Relief Fund were in Nigeria and Biafra, and this is very important. The Dallas Times-Herald said that they helped coordinate relief efforts. Biafra operations carried out were done to prolong the 1968 Nigerian Civil War and to funnel funds and suppliers to the rebels, so that the World Vision was helping prolong that terrible conflict in Biafra and Nigeria instead of solving it. This is from the Christian Century in May 1979. So that the Christian charitable purpose of this organization, or the humanitarian aspect, was linked to the Defense Department, to AID, that has been a means of repression of the poor and hungry all over the world. Newsweek described John Hinckley Sr. as part of World Vision International, a Christian group that started with born-again Christians, evangelical, humanitarian relief agency. Well, World Vision appeared on our television this week. I'm sure it was national. The program must have had a national appeal. And it was a one-hour broadcast that was not only shown one night, it was shown about three different times this week on our national television. And it was a one-hour program called Crisis in the Horn of Africa. Maybe you saw it in your TV guides in your local stations. Presented by World Vision, Crisis in the Horn of Africa, a compelling documentary about the greatest human need crisis in our world. See dramatic eyewitness footage from Ethiopia, Somalia, and Kenya. And they also had Uganda in there. Hear the moving stories of mother, children, and whole families struggle daily to stay alive. And the movie was made with Carol Lawrence, Dean Jones, Dale Evans, and Ephraim Zimbalist Jr. Ephraim Zimbalist Jr., if some of you are too young to remember, was hired by J. Edgar Hoover to make the great FBI movie to glorify the FBI for many, many years on television. It was all a bunch of hogwash, but it was pure propaganda to make the old gumshoes look like they were doing what they were supposed to be doing. And Stan Mooneyham is the director of World Vision. He's part actor and real ham, and reminded me like Reverend Moon's spiel. He was the Mooney ham, if there ever was one. If you saw this guy, and he was holding these poor, starving black babies as if they were their pet monkeys, you know, off at arm's distance of this faraway look. And I have the address for you. You can write to World Vision. It's in Pasadena, just World Vision Pasadena, 91109. And ask them for some literature, and I can give you their phone number if you want it, 213-795-3554. Now, their shtick was to send $12 a month to them, and they would provide for these children food and give them what they need. But the problem is, how do we know where the money is going? It reminded me of, at the end of World War One, when Herbert Hoover was over in Europe with the money for the refugees, and he sent approximately $53 million that was given to feed starving people in Europe, and the truth was it was going to the Solidaris, a group of white Russian czarists that left the Soviet Union at the time of the revolution, and they went over to Poland, and he was arming for World War II, the Vassilov's army, the Solidaris, the monarchies. And what we thought was going to starving refugees was, in fact, not going to them at all. It was going to armies to prepare to invade Russia and take the Soviet Union and throw out the communists. So that money to save the poor and the starving does not always go to the poor and starving. And if you read Reinhard Gehlen's Spy of the Century, the story of the head of Hitler's Eastern Intelligence, his first job was to starve 40 million people by putting a fence around the Ukraine when the war was over and just eliminate that many people to deal with and make another 50 million slaves. And with that mentality, Reinhard Gehlen was brought to the United States by Alan Dulles to form what became our CIA. So it's hard to believe that the Bleeding Hearts and the Nazis that made the National Security Council really care about these black people and sending grain or food. The difference, if you see any pictures of Israel, what Israel has become, when the Jews have a fundraising, a United Welfare drive, and send money to Israel, they build hospitals and schools and roads and water wells and all kinds of facilities for homes and education and health. But I haven't seen any of this so-called Christian money or missionary money helping the people over there in that way. You don't see the buildings or the skyscrapers or the planetariums or the symphony orchestras or the self-sufficient, like the kibbutzim, the housing for children and mothers. The money goes to Christian funds, and then what happens with it? There is more and more repression and more starvation. Now, there's a movie that was made recently. It's out now, called The Final Conflict. And this movie begins, it's a takeover, the third part of Damien, Damien 1 and Damien 2, the child who then grows up to rule the world. And the way this third movie starts, this is the third part of the Damien series and the final part, I understand it begins with Damien wanting to rule the world, and the evil forces are going to take over. And he's in a picture room where they're showing newsreels of people starving in Africa. The exact footage, probably, that World Vision had on television this week. And they're sitting and watching all these masses of humanity fenced in, caused by our multinationals, who could solve the problem immediately. In 1 hour, there could be the means to feed and house and clothe these people. But they're asking us to get involved in sending them funds that we never see the result of. And the movie begins with starving people in Africa, just like World Vision had. And it shows the multinational corporations collecting donations from all over the world. Now, this program was on 3 hours this week in our hometown, asking you $12 a month or send large fees of $20, $50, $100. And the movie shows multinationals with the idea of big corporations asking you to send your donation. And then the light goes up, and there's a screening room, and the man, the Antichrist, is now going to become president of the United States. He sat back and watched these stories and collected all this money, and Damien wants to be the head of the United Nations that distributes the food, and the president appoints him as the head of the children's branch. Remember the year of the children that Jim Jones had? It was that year that Jonestown came down, and 243 children were buried in an unmarked grave. The grave is there, but their names were never identified, and he took and dumped these children into plastic bags after their flesh had rotted, and that was the year of the children. Well, the story of this final conflict has the World Organization, or the Front, taking over the world and involved in the food program, getting the sympathies and the food program as part of that script. Now, who made that movie? That's a very interesting point, because, again, it goes back to links and denominations with Mr. John Hinckley Sr. and World Vision, the people who made that movie. There's a man named Robert Munger, M-U-N-G-E-R, who made the concept of the omen, the three of them. He's a devoutly Christian man. He was the production consultant, and he believed in Damien Thorne, the Antichrist. The movie was made at 20th Century Fox. That's an interesting studio that made a lot of money off of Star Wars with Mr. Stanfill, the president of 20th Century Fox, and he just went through the deal to sell the whole 20th Century, which involves our Pebble Beach and Monterey Peninsula, to a man named Marvin Davis from Denver, Colorado. Again, from Denver, Colorado, with close association with Frank Sinatra and Princess Grace of Monaco. The board of directors of 20th Century Fox is Princess Grace and Jerry Ford and Madame Chenault. It's a who's who of what's what of American history of the past 30 years, to tell you the truth. These are on the board of directors with an Annapolis graduate, a classmate of Jimmy Carter, as the president of the studio, now sold and working with Marvin Davis, who has extensive holdings in Australia and New Zealand. And the attorney for the transaction of buying the 20th Century Fox and the studio involved with these the Damien conflict and the world poverty, the food program, the attorney for the operation is Edward Bennett Williams, the same attorney for John Hinckley Jr. Does all of this mean anything? It means a lot if you sit back and study the individuals involved and their placement into the born-again Christian movement, and how certain people from Denver, Colorado, are connecting, say, to Hollywood and to Pebble Beach with attorneys in common, interests in common, and a historical relationship of organized crime, of terror, of extreme wealth, of indifference to poverty. Someone like Frank Sinatra is building a $34 million home in Las Vegas, Nevada. He could certainly send one plane load of food over to those starving people. These people are being used, and they're being exploited, and World Vision is working with the Defense Department in some way in third world countries, and a common lawyer for the 20th Century transaction from Marvin Davis from Colorado or John Hinckley Sr., I see certain common bonds of names and actions and things that I'm seeing on the screen that have a relationship to each other. This is the end of the first 30 minutes. We'll get back on that subject in a minute. This is Mae Brussel in Carmel.
Mae Brussel. We will return with the second half after a brief pause.